Thank you to Roger McGuinn and the Birds. I'm Mark Middleton. That's Bill Schaefer. This is Growing Bolder, the program that is smashing stereotypes and providing the inspiration to make the rest of your life the best of your life.
And we've got a great show for you today. Have you heard about Dr. Bill Thomas? Because you are about to in a couple of minutes. His Age of Disruption tour. It's nothing short of amazing.
Also, we have the leader of a unique medical mission team that is saving lives, training medical students, and building international bridges of understanding. Plus, the 90-year-old motorcycle mama who plans on riding her Harley across the country when she turns 100.
And we'll talk about why your cosmetics could slowly be killing you, and more important, what you need to do about it. And the greatest 95-year-old athlete alive today, all coming up on Growing Bolder. Well, it's no secret that the narrative of aging is mostly one of decline, disease, and disability. The negative stereotypes of aging, Mark, are so pervasive in the culture that we live in today that it has to affect the way that we age.
You know, you are exactly right, Bill. One study after another has now proven that how we perceive aging to a very large degree actually determines how we age, what the mind believes the body embraces. So the question becomes, how can we change that narrative? How can we challenge the stereotypes? There is one man who's on the front lines of this effort. He's launched an all-out assault with that very goal. He's an author, longevity expert, and healthcare innovator who has been called one of the leading influencers in aging, and his Age of Disruption tour has been traveling the country to rave reviews. Let's find out more as we welcome Dr. Bill Thomas. Hey, Dr. Thomas, how are you today?
I'm great. Glad to be back with you guys.
Well, we're thrilled to have you. Folks, if you don't know it, this is a Harvard-trained gerontologist who has already helped transform long-term care worldwide. What motivated you, doctor, to take another and an even bigger step to try to transform the way that we all view aging?
Well, I think it took me time, but I started to understand, just like you said in the opening of the show, it's the story that matters. It's how people interpret their experience that goes a long way to define their well-being. So being a doctor, I'm interested in well-being of people, and that made me decide to go out in the world and start changing the story of aging.
And it's really interesting, too, because this tour that you're on, the Age of Disruption, sounds like something a heavy metal band would be touring around the country in. You've hit at least 30 cities, and people love it. They call it nonfiction theater. So what is it that you're doing on stage, and how are you getting that message across?
Well, you know, I one of the things that people sort of expect when they hear that a doctor is coming to town to talk about subject of aging, people expect me to wear a white coat and to have PowerPoint slides. Instead, I show up with a guitar, a bass player, theater set, costumes, music, art, mythology, storytelling, biography, neuroscience, all mixed up. It's kind of like a TED Talk on steroids. And I believe, because I'm really passionate about this new story, that it needs to be told with passion. And that's what I think people are responding to.
Are you surprised, Doc? As you mentioned, we've had you on the show before, and you were great the first time, but I've seen the videos of your performance. I mean, you are a very savvy, sophisticated performer. Have you grown into that role? I mean, you deliver it with passion. You're fun. You're funny. You're interesting. Are you surprised at how darn good you are at this?
Well, I will tell you, it terrifies me every night before the curtain goes up. I will tell you that. Because one of the things I'm doing with the show, and maybe this is part of what the audience is sensing, is I'm going out and I'm taking chances. I'm doing things that are scary for me. You know, I'm trying to put myself out there and show people that age gives you the opportunity to do crazy new stuff. It's actually not youth that should be doing the crazy new stuff. It's people like you and me and others who have the experience that lets you try new things in new ways. So I you know, I'm in love with taking risks, and that's really what the show's about.
Well, we're talking with the rock doctor of aging, Dr. Bill Thomas. You've said that aging is also life's most dangerous game. That really caught our attention. What do you mean by that?
Well, you know, it's so funny. There's a part of that narrative, you referenced at the beginning of the segment. You were talking about this, what people believe. And what people believe is that older people should be wrapped up in cotton swaddling, when cotton, you know, stuffed with cotton balls and kept very safe. And I'm arguing that aging is the most dangerous game you're ever going to play. It's way more dangerous than the NFL or NASCAR. And you're an adventurer. You're an explorer. You're a mountain climber when you're aging. And so I try to present this different vision of aging that really says, this is an experience worth embracing and celebrating, and that's why I call aging life's most dangerous game.
You know, we love your take on this. I know you know all about the guys like Aubrey de Grey and others who call aging aging a disease. Bill and I often say what you just said, aging is not a disease. It is an opportunity. But one of the big problems, Doc, as you well know, is we are battling a constant onslaught of sophisticated marketing, a huge anti-aging movement that not only wants us, but in truth needs us to be unhappy and dissatisfied with ourselves.
I know.
How do we fight that?
I just want to say, how do you fight it? The best way to fight it is laughter. So part of the show, part of what we do, is that I set up a sequence of images taken from advertisements, and there you could find these kinds of images in any magazine you want to, you know, all the usual anti-aging stuff. But then I point out to people in a, you know, together in the theater, how ridiculous they are and the silliness of them. And honestly, people start laughing. And when people start laughing, I say, that's exactly right. The best antidote to this fear that's being peddled here is to laugh. It's just to laugh at how ridiculous it is. So we together, the audience and I, just have a great time laughing our heads off at the complete silliness that's supposed to make us afraid. I think it's like when we're little kids and somebody teaches us to laugh at the monster under the bed. You know what I mean? That's the best antidote to fear.
You know, Doc, age does have a pretty big PR problem, and that's that it's associated with the finality of passing away, of death.
Yeah.
So is there a way we can almost reinvent? Are we getting to the point where we need to look at how we die again and maybe reinvent the whole idea of death?
Yeah. You know, I think there is. And in fact, at the end of the show, together, I perform with a musician named Nate Silas Richardson. And at the end of the show, we do a song together called Ribbons and Bows. And one of the lines is, if I could choose the way I was to die, I would go fallen through the hot summer sky with ribbons and bows tied to my hands and my feet. And the image there is one of a person unafraid, a person who understands finality and accepts finality, but isn't cowering in fear. And I think that you're right on when you say we have to talk about this death issue, because it's really tied pretty closely to the aging issue in the minds of the public. And helping people reframe these things in healthy ways, I think, is one of the ways you can make the biggest impact.
Well, no question, you have been maybe a little early, if it's possible to call saying the right thing early in this culture. But does it seem like, from your perspective, Doctor, that the culture is finally starting to catch up, that this undeniable age wave that we all talk about has finally opened our eyes and made us realize we've got to reexamine everything about how we live and how we die?
Here's my feeling about it. Every morning, when 70 million baby boomers open their eyes every morning, every single morning, I gain new allies every morning. Every morning, they all wake up one day older, all 70 million. And every morning, some of them say, hey, wait a minute. I haven't bought the company line my whole life. I didn't embrace the war in Southeast Asia. I fought it. I didn't accept racism. I campaigned for civil rights. There are people who all along have been willing to question the dominant narrative. And every morning they wake up and they're looking for a new story to tell. They're looking for a new framework with which to understand aging. And then we come rolling into town and we have the best parody going because we believe in possibilities and change and growth and optimism and depth and spirit and soul. And the other side has injections.
That's awesome. What is in our final minute here for Dr. Bill Thomas and the Age of Disruption Tour, what's the next step?
Well, I've actually, personally, I've shifted my whole perspective on my career. You guys talk about me being a performer. I'm actually going to be on stage for as many years and as many cities as my health and my strength support me. I will be out there transmitting this message, and hopefully I'll be back in your town and we'll be partying together and we'll be telling a new story about aging, and I can't wait.
You know, it is so cool that you are doing this for yourself. It is amazing that you are doing it for all of the rest of us. Folks, he is Dr. Bill Thomas, a true change maker, a revolutionary influence who has devoted his life to making life better for those in assisted living. He is now redefining what aging is and can be for all of us. If you'd like to learn more about his work, about himself, about his Age of Disruption Tour, check out his website. It's Dr., that's Dr., Bill Thomas. .com. Thanks, Doc. Coming up, one of America's top medical educators on building better doctors and creating a better world all at the same time. That's next on Growing Bolder.
Support for Growing Bolder provided by...
Even when we're growing bolder, we can all use a ride every now and then. Did you know that many Medicare Advantage Flex cards help cover the cost of Uber rides to appointments and important deliveries with Uber Eats like groceries and OTC medication? Learn more at uberhealth.com/card or call 1-866-827-4584.
This is Growing Bolder. You know, creating a life that seamlessly combines your personal and your work passions, well, it's not always easy to do. But Mark Middleton is here with the story of a woman who has not only done it, but is saving lives in the process.
Dr. Judith Sim-Sendon is an associate professor of obstetrics and gynecology and director of global health initiatives and international experiences at the University of Central Florida College of Medicine. It's a big title that means she loves to practice medicine, she loves to teach, and she loves to serve. Her real passion is combining all three. This is her favorite classroom and her favorite clinic. The streets and remote villages of impoverished countries with little to no healthcare services.
Perfecto.
This is her fourth trip to the same communities in the Dominican Republic. She's here to lead a 49-person medical mission. Over the next 8 days, her interdisciplinary team of medical, nursing, engineering, and pharmacy students will work together, caring for nearly 1,000 patients in six communities.
Once we're there, our students learn so much from each other in terms of how to set up a clinic, how to see patients, how to triage, how to provide basic medications and provide counseling that goes with it. There is no other opportunity for medical students, pharmacy, nursing to really work together as teams, providing true patient care.
There's definitely a wheezing.
This is the ultimate win-win for a medical educator and humanitarian, an opportunity to teach students how to effectively collaborate while providing care for the men, women, and children who line up at each clinic.
I have no illusions that I can solve somebody's major life problems or medical conditions in a short-term international trip. But sometimes what the communities we serve need are somebody to listen and then to educate. And I hope that that stays with them.
Dr. Sim Sendin also worked with students from the local medical college, an opportunity to leave some of her expertise behind.
As a teacher, as a professor, I know that I know things so much more and understand it so much more when I'm teaching others how to do it.
And we're hoping that we've set a model for perhaps how they will deal with their patients in the future in their local communities.
Her glasses are bifocal.
Not only do the students treat patients, they compile electronic medical records so that future visiting medical teams know each patient's history and can assess their progress year after year. Dr. Sim Sendin sees her team's role not just as healthcare providers, but in a larger sense as ambassadors, and not just for the UCF College of Medicine, but for all Americans.
I speak very openly with the students about the fact that this isn't about the politics, that this is about caring for people one-on-one.
And sometimes that means making house calls, walking through the back streets to visit patients who can't come to the free clinics.
Yo puedo notar una cosa inmediatamente.
After speaking with and examining an elderly woman with respiratory issues, the doctor prescribes sitting up, a simple yet immediately effective form of relief and a valuable lesson for her students.
It's the nursing stuff that is so incredibly critical, sometimes not even just the medicine. Because as doctors, we can give them all the fancy stuff in the whole world, all the medicines, but if she's laying flat on her back, it's not going to do dip.
Of course, it's very exciting to study abroad. Of course, you're immersed in a different culture with different languages and different needs. But I really hope that this is translated to the people that we care for here in the United States.
Which is why Dr. Sim Sendin also oversees a student-run free clinic back home in Orlando.
In fact, I require our students who go on the international trip to participate in local service because we have certainly got needs in our own backyard.
Dr. Sim Sendin has created a unique and fulfilling work experience that weaves together her passions for medicine, teaching, and serving those in need in any way she can.
What drives me is the personal connection that you can make with another human being, and it doesn't have to be in the role of a physician.
But it is the role of a physician that these students are preparing for, and this real-world experience gives them a valuable insight into their personal strengths and weaknesses and a sense of their social responsibility to others.
Becoming an educator that promotes service and that engages service learning in our students is one of the most exciting things I do with my career. It is a privilege when patients let you take care of them, whether it's here or whether it's abroad. And doing service is a humbling experience that lets you appreciate just how fortunate you are to be allowed into patients' lives to do these things. It's wonderful.
Isn't she amazing, Bill? You know, medicine and healthcare have changed so much in the past 10 years that you wonder, and frankly, you worry a little bit about how new physicians can keep up. But when you meet educators like Dr. Sim Sendin, you're more optimistic than ever about the future of healthcare.
And Mark, what a great testament to the quality of education that the UCF College of Medicine is providing, creating medical professionals who are not only highly skilled, but compassionate and have a heart for service, not only in their own community, but in the international community as well.
Yeah, great story. And if you want to see the video behind that story and many others, just go to growingbolder.com. And while you're there, don't forget to sign up for our free weekly e-newsletter, The Growing Boulder Insider. Up next, the motorcycle matriarch. She rides a Harley cross-country to the nation's biggest motorcycle rallies, and she's 90 years old. That's next on Growing Bolder.
Sign up for the Growing Bolder Insider Newsletter, delivered to your inbox every week. Be the first to see our latest interviews, stories, and tips for making each day count. Sign up today at growingbolder.com. Miss an episode of Growing Bolder Radio? Subscribe to our podcast and get it on your mobile device. Details at growingbolder.com/podcasts.
I am Bill Schaefer with Mark Middleton, and this is Growing Bolder. I'm glad you're here because you're not going to believe this. Pull up to the radio. Our next guest is a great-grandmother. Nothing unusual about that, but here's the interesting part. She's 90 years old, and she may be the oldest active female motorcycle enthusiast in the world.
Yeah, and here's the deal, Bill. She doesn't just ride around the block. She rides from New Jersey to Sturgis, South Dakota, from New Jersey to Daytona Beach, Florida, nearly every year. And, folks, she is not riding on the back, hanging on to some big guy. She is 5 feet 125 pounds, and she is all alone on her 700-pound Harley. Let's welcome the amazing, the incredible Gloria Struck. Gloria, how are you?
Well, I'm fine, thank you.
Well, thank you for your time. And I got to get this clarified, because we just said that you go to Sturgis. When you go to Sturgis, you don't ride your bike the whole way. You trailer it, right?
Never will I ever trailer a bike. If I can't ride it, that's the time for me to quit.
And did we get this wrong? Are you really 90 years old?
Yes, I am. And you said I ride, to Daytona also, and Sturgis. Every year I do. Also, Bend, Oregon was our MotorMade convention 1 year, so I do cross countries also.
You go to Sturgis and you go to Bike Weeks. Young lady, do your parents know what you're doing?
Well, I'm sure my parents, they're deceased, but I'm sure they know what I'm doing, and I'm sure they're helping me to do what I'm doing.
Gloria, tell us, what do the other people that you run into think when they meet you and hear about your age and your lifestyle?
Well, no matter whether they're male or female, they all say I'm an inspiration to them. And also to people who don't ride motorcycles, elderly people, they say I inspire them to, keep on going, not to sit there and watch TV all day or do their knitting or whatever, but to get out there and live their dreams. That's what I always tell people, live your dreams. It's never too late.
Man, that is what we call growing bolder. You are preaching from the from our playbook, girl. Hey, let's talk about this, because you mentioned your folks. You started to ride motorcycles as a girl, which almost no young girls did way back then. How did you get started?
Well, my father started a motorcycle business in 1915 in Clifton, New Jersey, and he passed away from a motorcycle accident in 1928, when I just turned 3 years old. My mother carried on the business. She was an Indian motorcycle dealer, in the 30s and 40s. And when she retired in 1947, my brother took over as a Harley dealer. So this year, the family celebrated 100 years in the motorcycle business.
Wow.
Now, I don't have anything to do with the business, but my brother, built it up to what it became. But learning how to ride when I was 16 years old, I was born in a little apartment behind the motorcycle shop. So I was with motorcycles every day of my life. And when I was 16 years old, my brother decided one day he was going to teach me how to ride a motorcycle. The only problem was I did not want to learn how to ride a motorcycle, and I was not going to do it. Well, that was 1941, 74 years ago, and here I am, still riding.
Gloria Struck at the age of 9. Listen, girl, I read somewhere that you said that women who rode motorcycles then were considered tramps, and that you were discriminated against when you would pull into gas stations or go to hotels.
Yes. Yes, that was true. Now, like I say, you know, women, there weren't many women that rode. The motor maids rode, though, they started in 1940, and they're still in existence, celebrating 75 years this year. And I'm one of the oldest members still riding. I belong to the club 69 years. Myself and the founder's daughter, Betty Forbes from Florida, we're the only two that have reached these high goals. And this year, at convention, which I'm riding to in Santa Fe, New Mexico, Betty and I will be celebrating 70 years in the Motor Maids and still riding. I ride two wheels, you know. I don't go to trike or anything like that. I ride two wheels.
Do you get now why we wanted Gloria Strucke on this radio program, folks? If you've ever wondered or ever doubted how passion can keep you alive, can keep you energetic, can keep you fit, just listen to the voice of this 90-year-old woman who rides her motorcycle solo across country. And here's the other part. Gloria, you say you're going to do it when you're 100. Do you really believe you can keep going for another 10 years?
Of course. Like I said, you have to have goals, and that's what keeps me going. And not only that, it'll be on two wheels. Nobody has ever done that, male or female. And I have a lot of people that want to escort me on the way. So we got to see what happens, but that's my goal.
Hey, Gloria, Mark says it's passion that does it for you. I'm thinking it might be beer. Do you also live the biker lifestyle?
No. What biker lifestyle? The bikers... Bikers are people like you and me. I go to church every Sunday. I don't have any tattoos. I don't look like a biker. And everybody respects me in church. The church respects me. Everybody respects me. I'm just an ordinary person. And I would say 99% of the motorcyclists are just regular people. Some of them very responsible business owners. Some of them are millionaires. And they're just ordinary people. And I can't understand why people think you're one of those crazies, like zoom, 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 zooms from one lane to another like crazy. The average person does not ride like that. We are just ordinary, law-abiding people.
Bill, did you get that? Did she set you straight?
I thought she was, you know, went into places and roughed people up and, you know, caused trouble wherever she went.
Hey, no.
Gloria.
I'm loved wherever I went. I go.
All right, Gloria, we want to be like you. Now, some people out there, I'm guessing, don't want to ride a motorcycle across country at 90, but everybody wants a little bit of what you're about. So tell us, what is the Gloria Strucke takeaway? What's the moral of your story? What can we learn about living a big, bold life from you?
Well, the main thing is you are what you eat. And I'm a vegetarian. I used to eat meat and stuff like that, but you know, I just can't stomach it anymore. I mean, I never was a fan of meat, and I don't eat chicken either. I just can't stomach these things. So I live mostly on vegetables and fruits, and I do my own. You know, I cook fresh. I don't use frozen foods. I don't use prepared foods. I eat very plain but good food, and I think health is the main thing. See, when people get older, their health goes on them, but it shouldn't if they take care of their bodies. People say, well, do you work out? Because I'm not heavy, you know. I weighed 125 pounds. Now I'm like 120. But anyway, I don't work out because I don't believe in that. I believe there's so many heartbeats in your heart for your life, and I don't take any medication at all, not even aspirin, nothing. So maybe I'm not a good example for the people out there, but this is how I have lived my life.
You're a great example, and we're going to have to cut it off there because we have done run out of time. She is Gloria Strucke. Gloria, Bill and I, we got a couple of Softail Harleys. We're going to meet you in Daytona Beach at Bike Week this year, and we're going to have a big time, okay?
Later, okay?
The world's oldest female motorcycle rider, still going strong at 90, Gloria Strucke. Thanks. Up next, one of the world's leading experts on green beauty and what the chemicals in cosmetics are doing to our health. That's next on Growing Bolder. We've got news. Watch.GrowingBolder.com, the world's first streaming site for active adults, is now live. Growing Bolder TV shows, national specials, documentaries, and inspiring videos on ordinary people living extraordinary lives 24/7 on demand for free. Watch.GrowingBolder.com is now live.
Listening to Growing Bolder, I'm Bill Schaefer with Mark Middleton, and our next guest is a revolutionary when it comes to makeup, one of the world's leading authorities on green beauty. In fact, she's among the first to successfully provide, and this is really important, you might not even have thought about this, safe and eco-friendly makeup artistry, and she's done it on some of the world's most beautiful and famous faces.
And because of that, she's been featured in Elle, Shape, the LA Times, Vegetarian Times, and many more, because she not only asks a very provocative question, she answers it with alternatives that can actually get the job done. And that question is it time to break up with makeup? She's the author of The Green Beauty Rules. Let's find out more as we welcome Paige Padgett. Hey, Paige, how are you?
Hi, I'm well. Thank you for having me.
No, thank you so much for coming. And before we talk about the alternatives, let's talk a little bit about why we should be looking for the alternatives. Of course, we are all increasingly aware of toxic chemicals in our food and in our environment. Are there toxic chemicals still in our chemicals that can be just as harmful, and how big of a problem is this?
Well, there are toxic chemicals in cosmetics, and that's what the book's all about. I consider my beauty routine a diet. So I follow an 80-20 rule, just like many people do with, you know, their nutritional diet. Our cosmetics are filled with petrochemicals. Many of them cause birth defects, have been linked to birth defects, let's say. And they are endocrine disruptors, neurotoxins, you know, just linked to a myriad of health diseases and risks.
And Paige, one of the problems is, you know, we all know things like that, but I can remember personally, you know, when, oh, I got to stop using deodorant. So you kind of turn to the natural things or the stuff that's supposed to, but it doesn't work. So here you
right.
come, you know, how do you convince people that what you have to offer works as well as the other and does it?
Well, I mean, I try to lead by example, and I do work in the industry, and I always say, you know, if I can use green, chemically safe beauty products for a cover of a magazine, you can use them at home. Interesting, deodorant is a hard one still to sort of green and get the performance, but there's some really good brands out there. I don't know if you mentioned brands on your show, but there are some things. I mean, coconut oil is an antibacterial, antifungal, and that works really well. So products that have coconut oil and like baking soda work very well as deodorant. So, and there are several products on the market now that include those ingredients.
We're not opposed to mentioning brands. In fact, just before we went on, Paige, you said, I like the fact that two men are going to interview me. You know, when our producer asked us about this interview, I said, absolutely, I want to do it. You know, Bill and I are a couple of TV guys, and in our you know, total use of makeup will consist of putting some MAC on our face before we do a TV shot. But yeah, a while ago, I stopped using anything but Dr. Bronner's Pure Peppermint Castile Soap. I use it to wash my face. I don't use shaving cream anymore, and I use Tom's all-natural deodorant with no fragrance. I don't know whether that's good stuff or not. I just know that men are as concerned about putting chemicals all over their skin as women are.
I think so, too, and I want that to be my next book for men. But they are concerned, and there are – so we actually have a lack of products out there for men. It's getting there, but it's not there yet. Some of the bigger lines like Aubrey Organics has some things for men, and they're good. But you really just have to try things to see if they work for you, because it doesn't matter how, you know, premium the line is. It's not always going to work for you. You're not always going to love it. So you really just have to try things. But men are sort of getting the short end of the stick right now, but hopefully that will change, and I'm going to try to help them soon.
So, Paige, there's, I think, two issues here for people overall. One is, how do we know if the, you know, the big corporate makeup we're using has these harmful items? And the second one is, when you do switch to what's supposed to be a natural brand, how do you know if it really is, or if it, and if it really works?
Right. Well, one of the things that I tell people is utilize the Environmental Working Group's Skin Deep database. The Environmental Working Group is a wonderful nonprofit organization that really is an environmentally, it's like an environmental watchdog, so to speak. So I really trust them. I know the founder, Ken Cook, and they have a database, a cosmetic database with over 60,000 products in it. Oftentimes you don't have to give up your favorite premium products. There are, and then there's, you know, the 20% rule too. So I really teach people that you don't have to give up everything. But many times you'll find, especially for women, an eyeliner only ranks at 2 on the Environmental Working Group. And it might be, you know, a Dior or Chanel. So, you know, if it ranks at 2, keep it. Then there's no use even thinking about it being toxic or whatever. It's safe. If it ranks a 5, 6, 7, then you're going to want to replace it. This is the same for men. I'd say look up your products. You can build the database too. Basically, you just input the ingredients. My book kind of breaks it down on how to do that, The Green Beauty Rules. And essentially, I ask people just to consider each product individually. If you go shopping, the things you want to look for are petrochemicals. They have a lot of X's and Y's. You want to look for fragrance, and you want to look for parabens. I call it the 3 P's, parabens, perfume, and petrochemicals. Perfume is also fragrance. And anytime you see parabens or fragrance or petrochemicals, you kind of know it's probably not going to be a natural product. Fragrance is pretty easy. It'll say fragrance on the bottle. Same with parabens. So petrochemicals are harder to identify. But if you look for any of those, if you see fragrance or parabens, highly likely it's not natural. But you could look it up on the Environmental Working Group just to see if it's a product you love.
We're talking with Paige Padgett, who has a new book called Green Beauty that is out there. And, you know, I think a lot of us, Paige, miss the concept that our skin is really the largest organ in our body and that anything we put on it gets absorbed. Is that really the problem here and the information we need to understand?
Yes. Anything you put on, any substance you put on your skin, will be absorbed into your body, about 60%. So you want to, and the thing with it is it's the reason the patch works so well. It goes immediately to your bloodstream. So your liver is not detoxifying, nor is your kidney. So you're kind of bypassing that in the first step. So you really, really have got to be careful. And it's something that, I always tell people that is the reason why you should consider your beauty routine a diet. It really is metabolized in a similar way, meaning that it gets, you know, it goes directly to your bloodstream. So as long as the molecule is large enough, or rather small enough, it will go into your bloodstream, and pretty much any cosmetic makeup is.
Paige, I want to thank you for being a warrior for our behalf when it comes to makeup. I mean, you're seeing things that a lot of people just don't notice in life, and what you've done is incredibly eye-opening and helpful. Her new book is called The Green Beauty Rules. It's a simple step-by-step beauty detox plan that will give you ideas on what to try and what to buy and also what to get rid of. And for more information, check her out at her website, Paige Padgett, P-A-I-G-E. PADGETT.com. Great interview.
Coming up, the greatest athlete in the world over the age of 90, a 95-year-old Superman who says you can be one too. That's next on Growing Boulder.
Sign up for the Growing Boulder Insider Newsletter, delivered to your inbox every week. Be the first to see our latest interviews, stories, and tips for making each day count. Sign up today at growingboulder.com. Miss an episode of Growing Boulder Radio? Subscribe to our podcast and get it on your mobile device. Details at growingboulder.com/podcasts. The following interview was recorded before the passing of our guest.
This is Growing Boulder with Bill Schaefer and Mark Middleton. And man, this is going to be one of those quintessential interviews. It's going to blow your mind and maybe get you to start thinking about what the rest of your life is going to be like. Our next guest is a retired dentist who took up running and rowing when he was, say, 85, when he noticed he was putting on a little weight. Then by the time he turned 87, he started pumping some iron.
Yeah, and he wasn't done there. In fact, just 2 years ago, he took up competitive track and field. He is now 95, and get this, the World Masters Rowing Champion, the European Masters Decathlete Champion, the Swiss National Fitness Champion, a Masters Bodybuilding Champion, and earlier this year, he totally obliterated the 95 and over world record for the 200 meters. Let's welcome what may be the fittest man alive over the age of 80, without question, the greatest athlete alive over 90, 95-year-old Charles Euster. Charles, how are you?
Well, I'm okay. I'm 96.
96 years old.
And yes, I'm 96. You know, at my age, one doesn't like to be called younger anymore.
Yeah, you know, isn't that funny? Nobody wants to admit their age until they get to be a certain age, and then, as you should be, you're proud of it. Where are we speaking to you from, Charles? Where are you right now?
Well, I'm in Switzerland, close to Zurich, and at the moment we have a very, very cold spell.
Well, thank you for warming up a bit and chatting with us. Let's go back to your late 70s. What motivated you to start working out in your 70s?
I was rowing at school and also during my studies. But then I restarted rowing at the age of 63. And I did that because that was the very first time that they had a 60-year-old category. And so I thought that it might be interesting to see if I could start rowing again. And I teamed up with a friend, and we rowed in a double and also in a single sculls. And then I was continually rowing until 2013, a couple of years ago. And in 2014, I decided to start sprinting because I read something about sprinting, that is to say, high intensity interval training, that will be good for your heart. And so I started sprinting.
Folks, you are listening to the voice of 96-year-old Charles Euster. And Charles, what is it like to be the fastest 96-year-old who has ever lived? You certainly must realize that and ponder that thought.
The interesting thing, of course, that when you get to my age, the competition is not all that fierce. So it's probably not as difficult as it really sounds.
Now, you know, let me interrupt you there, and let me say this about that, folks. Google Charles Euster, and you can see the video. There's been a lot of videos of 95-year-old guys, 90-year-old guys that get in a track meet. And just because they're in it, it becomes news. And many of them can barely move one foot in front of the other. Charles Euster is a stallion. I mean, this is a guy who gets out there and runs like a man 25 years his junior. So Charles, don't sell yourself short. You broke the world record by, you know, multiple seconds. And what do you say to people out there? I read somewhere, Charles, where you told somebody, if you don't think you need to exercise, you might as well buy yourself, a membership in a crematorium or something like that. You obviously believe that exercising and working out not only has made your life better, but pretty much keeps you alive, correct?
Yes. However, the most important thing is not the physical training, but the most important thing is never to stop working, never to retire. That is the most important message that I could give to anybody. Never retire. Number two is watch your diet. And number three is exercise, in that order.
Charles, tell us, from the heart of a 96-year-old man, what is life like? How good can things be even as you approach the century mark?
Well, at the moment, I would say life is fantastic, stupendous, amazing, exciting, glorious, wonderful. My God, it's absolutely super.
Charles, we're out of time.
We got
15 seconds. Let's go back to number two. What's your diet? What do you eat?
Well, I would say the most important thing is a variety of your diet. That is the most fundamental thing. You must imagine we still have the bodies of hunter-gatherers. The hunter-gatherers had an enormous variety of diet, and we should continue that today. And, of course, the most obvious thing to do is to try to consume naturally produced food, things that have not been manufactured. That is the most fundamental thing. And that also applies to training. It's extremely important that the training be extremely varied. You should never do the same type of training for longer periods. They should be altered about every, five to 6 weeks, completely changed. It's very, very important. And reason is that as hunter-gatherers, we had an enormous variety of movements. We never did the same thing all over again. And that is the reason why there are so many injuries in sports, because the enormous repetition of doing the same thing over and over again. And the answer there is, of course, to cross-train. That is to say, not only train for one sport, but for multiple sports. That is, I think, one of the most fundamental things. We still have bodies of hunter-gatherers, and that should not be forgotten. The only problem is that we don't really know much about the hunter-gatherers. There are some people, of course, who like the idea of this paleo diet, but it does not apply today, because the details of the food that we consumed as hunter-gatherers simply does not exist today. But the most important thing, as I said before, is variety.
Amen. We're going to have to leave it there, folks. Too bad he doesn't have an opinion on how to get it done. He is Dr. Charles Euster, not only the world's greatest athlete over the age of 90, but pretty much a look into what could be the future for many of us in terms of active longevity if we get out, if we get moving, and if we pay attention to what he said are the three most important things we can do. Dr. Euster, thanks so much, and we will be following you in the year ahead. We're going to leave you with this, folks. The results of a recent study that divided mostly sedentary adults into two groups. For 6 months, one group was engaged in physical activity but not exposed to any positive images of aging. The other group did absolutely no physical activity at all but was exposed to positive images of aging. Older people that were vital, strong, energetic, happy, and passionate. And at the end of that 6 months, the group that did no physical activity but was exposed to positive aging images showed more physical improvement than the group that actually was engaged in physical activity but didn't get to see those positive images. Here's the takeaway. How you age is largely connected to how you view aging. Growing bolder is the view that leads to active, healthy longevity. Think about that, and we'll see you next time.
The Growing Boulder Radio Show is a production of Growing Boulder, LLC, all rights reserved. This program was recorded at Growing Boulder Studios in Orlando and is available as a weekly podcast on NPR One, iTunes, Spotify, and TuneIn. It is written and produced by Jill Middleton, Mark Middleton, and Bill Schaefer. Technical director is Jason Morrow. Production manager is Michael Nanis. Chief audio engineer is Mac Dula, and our most important team member, you. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram to keep growing bolder every day. Crimson flames tie-